Interview. To round off this set of introductory notes, I'm now joined by Roxana Haynes, who's the assistant director of this production of The Gondoliers. Hi, Roxana. Thanks for talking to us.
Hello. Lovely to speak to you.
Roxana was most recently assistant director for the outdoor production of Falstaff this summer, and has also directed some of Scottish Opera's recent on-screen productions. So, the settings of both acts of The Gondoliers are very visually attractive. Venice and then an exotic South Seas kingdom. And these colourful settings certainly add to the pleasure of watching the production. Could you tell us a bit more about these and how the scenes within the acts are changed as well?
Absolutely. It really is a visual feast. And the very opening image that you get after the overture, our big, luscious red and gold tabs in the Theatre Royal fly out. And it's quite emotional. I'm happy to admit that on opening night, I absolutely had a cry, even just when the tabs came out. The tabs come out and you see these Canaletto screens that look like buildings in Venice. And five ladies are reaching out towards, they're in their beautiful dresses, sat on a fountain. It looks like Venice or Florence or somewhere. And the ladies reach out in front of them and they reach out to the side of them. And behind them, these building flats separate and open up eventually in this scene to a amazing, beautiful, blue, luscious skies with the Venice canals there as well. And these pastel colours that are just, it's spectacular. You look like you're in Venice. And especially when you're stood, with my job, I'm lucky enough to stand on stage and, you know, work up there and direct from there. And the first time I looked up at this painting, which is, I don't know how many meters, it must be 20 meters high because it's able to be flown in and out from the ceiling, from the on the fly floor. And it's just enormous. You feel like you are there, especially with the lighting, that it feels like, if I close my eyes for a minute, rainy Glasgow is a million miles away. So you've got this beautiful Venice set, complete with these sort of candy cane barber poles, I suppose. You've got 11 of them at different ports marking where the gondolas will arrive into for Venice. And our male chorus, the gondoliers, will arrive pushing their own little gondolas on, and they arrive up onto the space and into this blue summer afternoon in Venice with no smells attached that would normally come with Venice as well, you'll be pleased to know. So that's the first kind of spectacular image that we've got. And these beautiful sliders of those Italian buildings I was talking about come in and out throughout that act. There's also a bridge of sighs that comes in and is flown into the space. And at a dramatic moment, all lifts up and that space opens up again to the big Canaletto. And then in Act Two, what you've got is an entirely different space, because we're now not in Venice anymore, but in Barataria. And there is this sort of, we call it the jungle cloth. I suppose it's quite a popular print at the moment, a sort of jungle themed with big luscious leaves and parrots that look like they've been in a rainforest, and just exotic plants and different colours, bright, vibrant colours, that is flown in on this back cloth with a sort of hedgerow behind it of bushes and trees, and these pillars that are also flown in at the top of Act Two to represent the sort of palace that these two kings are now jointly shared. There's also smelly washing because there are no ladies that are allowed in Barataria, so the men are all hanging up their washing throughout the palace. And it's quite a different scene from Venice. But then at the end of the show, we kind of go back to Venice at the end of the piece. And you get the reverse happen. So these the pillars swoop out of the action, the jungle cloth flies back out again, and we are back in Venice with this beautiful Canaletto that's opened up and that blue, luscious Italian sky. So those are the different journeys of kind of geographic, where were we hit geographically? But there are so many spectacular moments with the set throughout. It's Dick Bird's done a fantastic job, he really has.
Thank you. There's a lot of fun and laughter in The Gondoliers, and even with this production, the costumes seem very much part of the creation of that laughter. Could you say a bit about the funnier aspects of the costumes? I'm thinking of the Duchess of Plaza Toro's dress in particular.
Absolutely. I think it's quite a... it shows how confident our creative team are. I think when you're able to come up with such a bold decision and make it and commit to it throughout the entire show. And Stuart Maunder is fantastic, our director. He has really tried to make this piece not about the Duchess's dress, even though it is, goodness, you might have the dimensions there in front of you, but I think it's probably one and a half meter on either side of these panniers. And so she's, you know, she's got a wide berth. The Duchess moving her around on stage and making it look logical and making the staging feel like you aren't just moving around this long dress. You have to make it make sense and make it, of course it's funny, but you still have to make it make her find moments of sincerity and moments of real connection, which is what's really beautiful. But yes, of course, the thing you want me to talk about is the first moment we see the ducal party. They arrive on a gondola, which of course is, you know, one of the big things seeing as the title of the show. And it is literally a moving truck at the back of the stage that has to be built piece by piece. And as one piece is built and connected to the next, one person stands on, the Duke stands on, then one piece is made and built onto the next, and the Duchess with stage crew help her on with this enormous dress. And the next bit of the truck is added, and the next bit, and it wheels across the stage to center stage so that they're obviously not walking, but it looks like they're on the canal. It's quite magical, really. And on Saturday night, especially on opening night, the audience erupted with laughter, because what they're confronted with is not, and I think because it appears from behind the set, it takes you a while to realise what it is that you're looking at. And essentially what you're met with is the Duchess's dress that is enormous. And of course it was part of the fashion that if you had, you know, bustles on your dress, or if you had the underskirts of the dress to be that wide, you would have been, you know, maybe it's a sign of wealth, maybe it's a sign of status. But this is one step further, I think. And that's what is amazing about this conceptually, that it is so wide. And in Act One, her dress is such that it's a little bit transparent. So you can see her feet and you can see how hard she's moving and how much effort it takes for her to move the object. And in Act Two, when they are a bit richer and when their daughter is going to become the queen, she has more luscious materials put on it. She's got some satins on there and bows and tassels on the bottom. But yeah, we've had a lot of fun with this object. It is very funny, but also she does an amazing job. Yvonne Howard does an amazing job making it look easy. It's the way that this object's been designed now is she's got two handles on the top edges of this skirt, which she uses to maneuver herself. And it is a weighty object, but because of the way the casters work, it means she can move quite easily now. We had a few different iterations of this skirt, some that were less easy to maneuver, let's say. I spent one stage rehearsal being the back wheels of this skirt because the casters clogged, and so I was snuck behind the Duchess trying to help her, preempting her moves and helping her move, which is one very fun part of my job as an assistant director.
Pantomime horse in the CV.
Yeah, it did feel like puppeteering in a certain way, you know, but it is spectacular. And it's then been integrated into her relationship with the Duke, and there's a whole dance scene in the gavotte where the Duke helps her move around, and a moment where Don Alhambra, the Grand Inquisitor, takes his hat off and has the audacity to put his hat on the edge of this enormous dress. And So it is, you know, for the audience, it becomes a normal thing quite quickly because we don't make a deal of it. We're inviting the audience to see it as normality. But it is still, you know, of course, that is the Grand Inquisitor taking it a step too far to place his hat on this object. So it's very funny. Casilda also has an eye patch that is entirely for fashionable reasons. Nothing else. And it comes from a history of this kind of Spanish art, where again these women would have had these, you know, black eye patches. If you're imagining a pirate, you're not far off. And so at different points in the show, Casilda turns up stage and will change the eye that the eye patch is on, purely for comic effect and to see if the audience can spot that that's what's happening. There are some scenes where she puts it up into her wig completely, and so she's not. But it's a show that she's keeping on, a performance that she's keeping for most of the people.
And what about the sort of half and half Marco and Giuseppe's costumes in Act Two?
Yeah, so Act Two opens and the gentlemen are facing upstage, and they're facing upstage, so they're giving us one shoulder each, and they're mirroring each other. And then they turn downstage slowly with this beautiful musical chord, and you can see that they are wearing half a royal outfit each. So they are white and black on their inside legs. On their outside arms and legs, they have got this royal red velvet, not velvet, but a red jacket over their arms, and these gold detailing over the shoulders. And we hit those images quite a lot, where we're looking at them holding scepter and orb, because they are acting as one individual. The deal is they're going to Barataria to reign jointly. And that, again, is another one of those moments where the creative concept was really integrated into the design of the show. And I think that Dick Byrd and Strip Maunder have done a fantastic job, absolutely fantastic job with that. So at the very end of the piece, when it is revealed who the true king of Barataria is, I'm not going to give you any spoilers at this point. When it is revealed who that king is, this character steps downstage, puts his arms out either side of him, and two other cast members pull this jacket from him. And it has been, you know, it's got magnets down the back of it. And it is this most spectacular moment. And it's just, like I said, unadulterated joy, because you're one, it's just an absolute surprise that this jacket that has been, it's a long jacket, it's sort of leathery, it's dark, and it's, you know, it looks very there's no sense of the magic that is to come in this jacket. But this character throws his hat to the side, and a chorister catches it if they're lucky, or it pokes him in the eye if they're not lucky. He puts his arms out either side, and these characters pull this coat from him, and he is then, underneath this coat, is in a full Prince Charming attire. Okay, it's kind of Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. It's kind of like beautiful, long, like charming, absolutely handsome man with this long brown hair that's just been pulled up to a ponytail. And underneath this jacket is an absolute Prince Charming outfit. And it happens in time with the music over just two tiny, tiny bars before he's revealed. And it is, you know, there was applause on Saturday night because of this moment. And there's just this sense of, that's one of the other moments where the visual storytelling tells us and encompasses in with what the music is saying here, and how magical that moment of reveal and transformation is. And that's still one of my favorite parts of the visual storytelling here.
Fantastic. So unlike some Gilbert and Sullivan creations, The Gondoliers is not exactly a satire. For you, are there any elements in this production that do have that sort of satirical intention?
As a company putting on any show right now, we have to ask why we're doing it, and we have to ask ourselves what we are offering to that piece now. And I think the satire helps us with this particular piece. There are always moments in GNS where the cast or where the team are invited to update, you know, famously in the Liszt aria where it's all modernized, you know. But for this one, Stuart Maunder asked Richard, the infamous Richard Seward, to add his own text to Small Titles and Orders, which is the Duke and Duchess's duet in Act Two. And there are some mild political references in the original text here, but we have made those much more on the nose, let's say. And I think that that gives us room to update it, but it also gives us room, like you're saying, to acknowledge the references and to acknowledge that it can be a bit tongue-in-cheek without us meaning to take any offence, you know? So you've got some beautiful lines like, I appoint all my cronies, though most of them phonies, and I have a soft spot for Rees Moggy, is one of the lines that has been changed. He's changed his direction, also my selection, with U-turns and comings and goings. Cummings has a capital C in nice. The surtitles, very important. And
there's an Extinction Rebellion mention as well, as the, yeah.
Yeah, he finds it Orwellian. We must have some loft insulation. And my personal favourite is that redecoration was Carrie's creation, but someone else paid what was owing. So if you were, yeah, if you're up to date with your news, then there are moments of that Richard Suett is offering for moments of laughter, for sure. And I think that's part of it, that we are talking about, you know, the Gondoliers are Republicans, you know, heart and soul, and they say that, and we talk about how to run a country and how what kind of king that they would be. And I think that coming out of the 18 months, 19 months that we've just had as a community, I think that it is an interesting time to be talking about those things and to be, you know, acknowledging the humour that can come, you know, and the power that art has in this time, I think is really significant. So yes, there are lots of moments of satire, even though it's not their most satirical piece.
And as you say, that modernisation is even a GNS tradition in itself, isn't it? That sort of tweaking the words to reflect whoever is in the news today, you know?
Absolutely. It's a question as to whether we update it again for Hackney.
Oh, yes, 6 months' time or something, yeah.
Because these things will not be popular anymore, you know? These won't be local, you know, relevant news
and,
anymore.
And, so, you know, Scottish audience versus London audience as well, you know?
Yeah.
There'll be lots to listen out for.
Lots more to laugh at about, you know, about London's Prime Minister up here rather than...
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Might be a different Prime Minister by then anyway, so...
quite.
Thank you. And what about using the word pantomime? Do you think that's appropriate here?
I think it depends with what context you use the word pantomime. I use the word pantomime with love and respect. And if you're looking for something that is silly, that is a word that Richard Suett and our lovely director Stuart Maunder has used a lot, that, you know, this piece is very silly. There's a lot of cheese in this show, a lot of references to, we've been speaking a lot about Julie Andrews in the rehearsal room, about that feeling of being on top of a mountain and unadulterated joy. And if you go to a panto, especially in Glasgow, if you go to a panto to be for moments where you can forget what's happening in the real world, if you go to the panto to for something that's silly and, you know, just absolutely joyful, then I'd say yes, there are lots of parallels with pantomime here. And the, you know, the very fact that the dialogue in this show, that's, you know, we don't have dialogue in so many operas really, but the dialogue here and the seasoned performers that are speaking that dialogue are so funny that, you know, I've been working with this show now for 6 weeks and I'm still laughing. You know, Richard Suett is still making me laugh every show. And I think that's part of it here. So as long as you're not using pantomime as a dirty word, then absolutely there are parallels to it. And I think that if you're looking for something that is absolutely just entirely joyful and unadulterated in its purity and its innocence, then this is absolutely the show for that. it is silly, and you should come expecting silliness. And the silliness is not just in the, obviously not just in the visual staging, but in the text, in the words, in the music. You know, there's the whole, the Duke of Pazzatoro's first aria has a drum written into it, and his sweet Luis, who is Casilda's lover, but not that the Duke knows about it yet, he has this drum and he accompanies him throughout the entire aria, and you can hear the Duke getting frustrated with the drum because it's too loud and it's too noisy in his ear, and so he walks away to the other side of the stage for the next verse. Then the drummer joins him and he has to walk to the other side of the stage because it's too noisy again. And at the end of the number, there is no drum. And, you know, amazing Stuart Maunder has rationalized that because the Duke has stopped the drum from being drummed at the end. You know, so there's comedy and silliness in it from that's integrated into the music too. And I think Gilbert and Sullivan were absolute comic geniuses for that. It's and that's what we've, yeah, that's the kind of show that you're going to experience for sure.
And you've sort of touched on this before, but I've got a quote from Stuart Maunder, the director here, that says, "The Gondoliers' fusion of infectious melody, wit and heartfelt sentiment is a combination that never ages." So I wondered if you could sort of expand on that, the extent to which The Gondoliers stands the test of time, I suppose.
Every night I have a different bit of the show as an earworm in my head. And it's not... I think it's amazing that it's not the same bit. You know, for some operas you get the trio from Così going round and round, or whatever it might be. But for this, every scene is catchy, and every scene is has those moments of poignancy or of comedy or of, yeah, something that's ear-catching. But you know, there are, of course, we have to acknowledge that this was being written in a very different time to now. And if you do that and you take the bits of joy that are in, you know, that are in the score and in the text with the music, if you take that and you use that as a launching point, then there's lots still to be gained from what was written and what we can take from it now. But also you have to, I think that it's our responsibility as creatives to see the bits that aren't useful anymore, you know, to, and there are a few bits in this that are not particularly feminist, you know, bits in this that audiences might look at and say, oh, we really calling, you know, we really going to use the text, my poor, poor little woman. And I think that, yes, we are, because the way that we're doing it is with such, is acknowledging exactly where that's coming from. And those boys are being silly when they are saying that. And the women in this are steadfast and strong and have made their own decisions. So I think that it, of course, that plays in every aspect, and it's good for opera to be asking those questions. And as long as you've got a team that are asking those questions and doing it with, doing it absolutely openly, being approachable with what it is that we can keep and what we can change. And even Ian Martin from Doyle Cart has been involved in conversations with us about, you know, why we are doing this and what it is that is to be taken from it and what is relevant to our audiences now. There, you know, those conversations have been had frequently in our rehearsal room. So I think that there is loads that we can still take. And there's something very, I don't know, there's something I find very, very charming about that era and about that type of text and about the silliness and the puns and the language. There's something very, yeah, not archaic, but there's something very reminiscent. I it's very much of a different time, and there's something in that that lets us off the hook, you know, that it is that we can go back in time in the same way that you said about Panto. You kind of go to a GNS knowing that you're expecting silliness and knowing that there is a certain amount of suspense of disbelief that you have to employ. And I think that's what's magical about it.
And probably especially welcome, you know, like you hinted at earlier, after these couple of years, you know, that sort of silliness and suspension of reality.
Yeah, yeah. You were invited to spend the next, you know, 2 hours, 2 and a quarter hours in that world with us, you know? So I think that that's what this show does more than a lot of shows we've done here, for me personally anyway, is that it is unapologetic in reaching its hand out to you at the beginning of the show and going, you're coming with us. Come with us on this journey. And if you do come with us, you will laugh a lot. You know, we cannot promise there'll be no tears. And there's something with the guiding of that. And the, you know, even the choreography for this is so, it's rooted in this Spanish tradition because of our amazing choreographer, Isabel Baquero. And you can feel the rhythm and the pulse because of the footwork. And you'll be able to hear the footwork and how it accompanies the music of the cachuca. There's a sense that you will be there and you can feel how hard this cast are working. And you can hear how hard this cast are working. And there's something really palpable when you're in the seats with us. When you can, when everybody on stage is trying to tell that story. Does that make sense? And you are just included in that, and coming along, you will absolutely be dragged into this world of Venice, and you won't want to leave. I don't want to leave.
Fantastic, thank you. Roxana Haynes there, the assistant director for this production of The Gondoliers by Gilbert and Sullivan. And that concludes this pre-recorded audio introduction. Thank you for listening, and on behalf of Scottish Opera, I hope you enjoy the performance.